And now, my friends, by the grace of God, we're entering the 13th chapter of this book. This chapter, along with chapter 22, occupied the Christian imagination and the Christian thought like no other chapter or book of the Holy Scripture. And this because chapter 13 refers to the person of the Antichrist and the false prophet, being that every generation of Christians has attempted to conjecture and, if possible, identify these two persons of the Antichrist and the false prophet. And as we'll see, we are dealing with two different people, two persons. And this holds true for past and more recent generations of Christians. But according to the very wise observation of St. Andrew of Caesarea, and I quote, "Time and experience will reveal these things to those who practice spiritual vigilance." This verse of St. Andrew that I have quoted for you in the past provides a key for a clear and correct interpretation of the book of the Revelation. These things will be revealed to those who keep a life of nipsis, a life of vigilance. Every prophecy will come in its designated time, and as long as someone maintains a pure heart, these events will be revealed and obvious again to the vigilant. In this regard, the Antichrist will also be revealed to us. The faithful will know that this man is in fact the Antichrist. These two persons, the Antichrist and the false prophet, appeared to the vision of the holy evangelist as two beasts. And the first beast, the Antichrist, surfaces from the sea. The second beast, the false prophet, he comes from the earth. The first beast is more horrifying than the second beast. The Antichrist, the main person, is naturally much more dreadful than his false prophet, who is also described as a beast, but less dreadful than the Antichrist. These two beasts, the Antichrist and the false prophet, will put into effect the worst war ever known to the church all through the centuries. However, immediately after the activities of these two persons, the final stage of the end of history and final judgment will be at hand. We will see these things step by step, and of course we simply are doing a quick summary here, a general diagram of what we will be seeing and studying in this 13th chapter by the grace of God, where we will be seeing again all these characteristics of the Antichrist and the false prophet. And we begin now to read the opening verse of the 13th chapter. "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast ascending out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." The prophet now sees one more new vision. He stands at the seashore, and from there he sees this new vision. What does he see? An ascending beast rising out of the sea. And this is the reason why he refers to the horns first and afterwards to the heads. In the case of the dragon, reference was made to the heads first and then to the horns. Take a cow, for example, and place her in water. When she's slowly surfacing, what would you see first, her head or the horns? The horns will obviously appear first. Here, therefore, the description corresponds beautifully to this very nice and subtle observation, having the horns appear first, because we have a slow and progressive ascension of the beast. The beast is ascending slowly, and the holy evangelist is describing the beast based on this slow motion, progressive ascension. Now the question is, does this slow ascent have any relation to the progressive revelation of the true person of the Antichrist inside history? The answer is most likely yes. As I told you, this beast is the Antichrist. And as St. Andrew of Caesarea states, quoting early Christian saints, according to Saint Hippolytus, Methodius, and others, this beast is considered by them to be the Antichrist. He further tells us that it surfaces from the sea, which sea is relative to the abyss, because at the 11th chapter, when the war of the beast against the two witnesses, the two olive trees, is described, he tells us the following at that particular point. The beast that comes up from the abyss will attack them and overpower and kill them. Please allow for a short insertion here. I have mentioned this to you before, and I may continue to repeat this. A characteristic habit of the writing style of St. John the Evangelist is this. At some unexpected point, he presents a very brief summary of a certain subject, which he plans to analyze a little farther down. In other words, he prepares the reader of what's to come. He refers to this specific topic with a few lines, and then he continues by saying other or different information. And then the proper time comes, and he proceeds with an analytical description of the specific topic that he briefly touched upon at a previous time, quite unexpectedly. This is a specific trait of St. John's authorship or writing style. There in the 11th chapter, in two lines, he spoke about the beast coming up from the abyss. Here, in chapter 13, he tells us that the same beast is rising up from the sea. Consequently, sea and abyss are interchangeable here, or they rather mean one and the same thing. Because in Greek, the word abyss, or avisos, simply means an ocean, a sea without a bottom, an unfathomable ocean, or a bottomless body of water. So, abyss refers to a bottomless, chaotic pit. Some of our great seas are very deep, approximating 8,000, 9,000 meters in depth. In the era of pre-ultrasonic devices, if we would have to use a rope with a weight to measure the depth, we would soon conclude that this ocean is bottomless, avithos in Greek, or abyss. Consequently, the sea is symbolic of the abyss, but at the same time, it serves as the counterpoise of heaven. The throne of God is found in heaven, while the abyss, the sea, is the territory of Satan. Now, be careful, don't take this literally. It is not the sea, the physical sea as we know it. This is an image, so be careful. It is not the sea. Let's not think that we should keep looking for the Antichrist to come out of some sea. This would be a terrible delusion. The sea is a creation of God. This serves as a symbolic imagery to show where the Antichrist will rise from. It is an expression when we say he's the scum from the boiling of the abyss, meaning he has much evil inside him. His evil is of abyssal dimension. So this is simply an image. And something more, according to the Holy Scriptures, the sea is considered a symbol of the unrest and the turbulence of the ethnic world, the world of idolatry, the world of the nations. St. Andrew writes, "He, that beast, will come out of the turbulent sea of the worldly sinfulness." The Antichrist will not come from a holy family or from a holy monastery or from a church, but he will come up from the turbulent worldly life. This sinful worldliness will bring forth the Antichrist. In continuing, the Antichrist appears as a beast, and this because of his inhumanity and a total lack of human feelings. The seven heads and the ten horns reveal his relation to the dragon or the devil. But during the previous vision of the Holy Evangelist, we saw the dragon, the devil, to have seven heads and ten horns. So the dragon or the devil bears 7 heads and 10 horns. Here the Antichrist also bears 7 heads and 10 horns. Please hold on to this detail. St. Andrew of Caesarea says, the 10 horns along with the crowns and the 7 heads refer to his union with the devil. This shows the relation and the union between the Antichrist and the devil. And since the horns are symbolic of power, this also shows that the Antichrist will receive his power from the devil. Along the same lines, the heads with the crowns, which are indicative of authority, royal authority, authority given to the devil by God, by allotment, God allowed the devil to have it. You do remember what he said to the Lord when he took him on the top of a high mountain, and in a moment of time, he showed him a panoramic view, all the kingdoms of the earth, and he said, if you fall and worship me, I will give you all these kingdoms. They will be all yours. They are not his. God allowed the devil to govern for a while, but this passing of authority to the devil is temporary. Now the devil will pass this authority over to the Antichrist. This is absolutely amazing. Watch this. The Antichrist is a mere man. He'll be born naturally from a father and a mother. By God's help, once we finish this paragraph about the Antichrist, and this is not going to happen today, before we begin the description of the false prophet, in the rest three classes that are left, I will attempt to give you a complete description of the Antichrist based not only on this verse of the book of the Revelation, but using all the available sources, and we do have many, not only from the Holy Scriptures, Old Testament and New Testament, but from the Church Fathers as well, who interpret and provide for us the characteristics of the Antichrist in a truly amazing way. But this after we finish the analysis of this present verse. Based on what we said so far, it becomes obvious and most apparent that the Antichrist is a man, a normal human being, a man born from a father and a mother. But Christ also appears as a man, and he's a real man, 100% real, perfect man and perfect God. The devil will see him. He will consider him a great adversary. He will lift him up on the mountain after his 40 days of fasting and prayer to destroy him. He will suggest to him, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world if you fall down to worship me. And the Lord told him, get behind me, Satan. Now the devil will see that the Antichrist is also powerful, a strong personality, and he will repeat exactly what he tried to do with Christ. He will tell him, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. In essence, you will reign upon the entire earth if you worship me. And the Antichrist will worship him. He will be following this parallelism, Christ, and the Antichrist will try to be the monkey of Christ. So the 7 heads, as I mentioned, symbolize the numerous heads of evil, but the many faces of his servants and followers. St. Andrew of Caesarea calls them his close aides or his bodyguards. This is significant, as we will see in the continuation of this study. And upon his heads, the names of blasphemy. What is meant by this? The heads of the Antichrist are his close aides, his close co-workers. And when the number 7 is used, this denotes multitude. It is a conventional number and not an exact number. It shows that he will have a multitude of co-workers. And upon the heads, there are written the names of blasphemy. This shows that these servants of the Antichrist will not cease to render various blasphemies against Jesus Christ and his church. From these different blasphemies, which one would you say to be on the top of the list? the denial of the God-human nature of Christ. This is the chief of all blasphemies, the leading blasphemy. And as St. Andrew comments, these characters did not cease to blaspheme Christ from the beginning, from the time that he came into the world, and this has continued all through the ages, all through history. Do we have the sense today, my friends, do we have the feeling that in our days the supporters of the Antichrist have increased in numbers and they blaspheme Christ by presenting him as a mere man, simply a man and nothing more, not perfect God and perfect man, but they reduce him to a simple human being? Such is the outlook of some of the authors, story writers, fiction writers, newspaper journalists, magazine writers, article writers of books, icons producers of theatrical works and movies. They present Christ merely as a human being denying his divinity. Needless to say, the mass media is quite often in the hands of the Antichrist. I don't know if you recall a number of years back the play or movie Jesus Christ Superstar. I believe this was even on the TV screen recently, as some of you told me. The obvious attempt in this play was to present a powerless and weak Christ, a Christ of limited power, a Christ as the Jews would wish him to be, as the atheists would wish him to be, as the Antichrist would wish him to be, as the devil would want him to be. To add to this, there's a number of educators, so-called teachers in public schools, who deform and distort the image of Christ to the students. They distort the person of Christ. Who was Christ anyway? What was Christ? Well, thank God we also have pious teachers to this day, but they are so few. Today you also have a number of politicians who minimize the significance of the person of Christ. My friends, do we have the realization that all these people are in the service of the Antichrist and they consist of the names of blasphemy? What do you think blasphemy is? What is the nature of blasphemy anyway? The usual habitual cursing that's heard at the workplace, at the marketplace, the commonplace cursing and blaspheming of divine persons and divine things. Of course, these are deplorable practices. You break out in a cold sweat when you hear a person open their mouths and blaspheme the name of Christ or of his mother, the Panagia, a despicable practice in some countries. Now, if you approach this person, this man or woman, and you ask him, "My good man, do you believe that Christ is God?" He will say, "Of course. Whoever gave you the idea that I don't?" Of course, these are people who blaspheme out of anger, out of habit. He has no excuse, and he knows it. He has the mouth of a blasphemer, no doubt. But this is not the highest form of blasphemy. On the other hand, you may be at the company of a man who may not curse, may be very polite, who may not blaspheme against sacred things, one who speaks with eloquence, using beautiful words, and in the process he opens his mouth and he tells you, much like Arius, that Christ is not really God. He's merely a creation, as the Kileists or the Jehovah's Witnesses go on saying. The honey-tongued Kileists who make you think that honey drips out of their mouth. And they are the greatest of blasphemers. So this is the essence of blasphemy, the denial of the God-human nature of Jesus Christ. There's also something else that demands our attention here. The fact that no other religious founder, such as Muhammad, Confucius, Buddha, and anyone else, is blasphemed as harshly as Jesus Christ. Of course, we don't reside in Buddhist countries or in those areas of these different Eastern religions, but rest assured that these founders of these religions are not blasphemed. Only Christ is blasphemed. And do you know why? It's quite simple. All these religions of the world are creations of the devil. They are natural religions. They do not emanate from God's revelation. They are simply creations of the devil. And consequently, the devil does not have any reason or motivation to incite the people to begin to blaspheme Buddha or Confucius or Muhammad. But he has all the reasons to incite people to blaspheme Jesus Christ. Hare Krishna, Buddha, Baha'i, Muhammad, these are not adversaries of the devil. Only Christ is the opponent of the devil. This is precisely why he pushes people to blaspheme him. These are the names of blasphemy. And this because the religion of Christ is true, and it is the only truth. Pay attention. It is true, and it cannot be juxtaposed, it cannot be compared with any other religion. Unfortunately, today we offer in our Greek schools the choice of studying other religions. In our religious studies, we tend to welcome knowledge about other religions, and more often than not, to undermine Christianity and to lower its level to that of the other religions to the eyes of our children, giving them the impression that Christianity is of the same caliber as the other religions. And because of this impious practice, we now hear our children come up with this nonsense. So what if I am a Christian? This is my parents' doing. They baptized me, and that's why I'm a Christian. I could have been a Buddhist. Instead of them saying, glory be to God, for I'm not inside falsehood and lies. I have come to the knowledge of the truth. Do you see how the agents of the Antichrist have infiltrated these areas, and they strive to reduce Christianity to the level of the other religions? And since Christianity is the truth and the only truth, God's revealed truth, for this reason, the devil is frothing at the mouth from malice. My dear friends, my beloved listeners, every time we read one of the verses of the book of the Revelation and we interpret it, it comes to remind us to leave us with one message. And the message is that we must stand tall. We must stand well. We must stand upright. We need to endure every temptation and every difficulty. Let the devil froth at the mouth. We have the help of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Acesta este trupul meu, care se frânge pentru voi spre iertarea păcatelor.
Amin.
Deci, dintr-o acesta tot, acesta este sângele meu, al legii celei noi, care pentru voi și pentru mulți se varsă spre iertarea păcatelor.
Amin.
Ale tale, dintr-o ale tale, ție ți-aducem de toate și și pentru toate. Sfânta, curata, prea binecuvântată, slăvita stăpâna noastră de Dumnezeu născătoarea și pururea Fecioara Maria. Tu îi pomenește, Doamne, pe preasfințitul nostru episcop Efimie, pe care îl dăruiește sfintelor tale biserici, în pace, întreg, cinstit, sănătos, îndelungat în zile, drept învățând cuvântul adevărului tău.
Și pe tot, și pe toate.
Și ne dă nouă cu o gură și o inimă a slăvi și a cânta prea cinstitul și de mare cuvință numele tău, al Tatălui și al Fiului și al Sfântului Duh, acum și pururea și în vecii vecilor.